Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode, and today we have Shamil, and he is a marketing professional with over a decade of experience. He's a former partner of Nova Solutions Digital Marketing Agency with vast experience in SEO, web design, and digital marketing overall. Shamil came to the digital marketing field by chance, yet having an academic background served well when it came to problem solving and thinking outside of the box. Now, as the founder of DeNovo Group, an agency with a focus in turnkey lead generation for legal, medical, and home improvement clients, Shamil has an interesting story to share. All right, let's get into it. Hey guys, welcome to another episode. And today we have Shamil, and Shamil is a digital agency owner. And welcome to the show, Shamil.
Glad to be here.
Awesome. So tell us a bit about your journey. How did you get to where you're at today in your marketing agency?
You know what, it's frankly by, I want to say chance or fluke, I went to Ireland to do my master's degree, finished, came back to Canada, and at that point I tried several jobs, and I wasn't thinking about the field, I was thinking about my day-to-day life, like what would I want to do? Do I want to sit, you know, in front of the computer? Do I want to talk to people? And by method of elimination, I got it to that point where I wanted to be an account manager. So I wanted to have relationships with my own clients, right? But I didn't want to have it digital. I wanted to, so to speak, wine and dine them and you know, have an official face-to-face relationship. I thought I'd be good at that. Pretty organized and so forth. So I moved to Toronto. I originally lived in Ottawa and got a job through a friend, you know, at a digital marketing agency. And I was literally locked, I don't want to say locked in the room, but I had a room with no windows, a phone and a yellow pages. And we were selling, and this was a make and break me because I, at that point, realized that this is it. And we were selling, you know, digital marketing, like search SEM. This is the era where you could call, when you could call somebody on the phone and you know, say, hey, type in this keyword, and you could activate and approve their, you know, two keywords in a 2 kilometer radius of their office and get them on Google. And they wouldn't believe you. They're like, oh my God, how'd you do that? Right. And then you would sell them packages. So I did that. It took me quite some time to sell. Because I remember my first cold call, you know, it was quite difficult. This is at the time where, you know, they worked and you could get through to people. But I started selling in about 4 months. And it just took off from there. From the moment that I actually started, so to speak, producing, in about a year, year and a half, the gentleman who I was working for made me his partner. So, and for me, I've always been very competitive and athletic. And I kind of, we had a board, I remember, in that office where we would, you know, have a tally how many meetings we booked with people. You know, and like we would just sit there and just one more. And I realized that, you know, kind of you're talking about motivation and all that. With an extra phone call, sometimes you hit the right client. And my partner at the time, you know, closed the biggest plastic surgeon in Toronto. Wow. With a phone call after hours, you know, just got through to him. So, yeah, that was kind of my little journey.
That's awesome. I love how you tied competitiveness into sales, because I think that's a huge component. Whereas like, if you don't have that drive to make that next sale and that next sale and that next sale, it's so easy to get discouraged by the rejection, especially when you're cold calling. Like whenever I was running my agency, did a handful of cold calls and then dropped in businesses and stuff. And it's just no after no after no until you get that yes. And I love that you were able to adapt and overcome and become that cold caller. Cause I still think that is, like, if you're really good at like outreach and taking that rejection, like that's the way to grow any business at the end of the day.
I 100% agree. Couldn't agree more. And I'll tell you this much, if I could force myself at this point, after doing this for over a decade, to sit down, pick up that phone, I would probably close a couple of more accounts, you know, and I mean, maybe it's not the most efficient way to spend my time. Having said that, I truly, truly believe that, and I've encountered some monsters on the phone, but the thing is, especially in our world, the right things have to click, because some people are very schmoozy and very good on the phone to get through, but then they can't, they might book that appointment, but then they fail at the face-to-face presentation. Right, so you can get in front of somebody, but then you wouldn't be able to sell them. And I mean, it's all a game of numbers, but I've seen guys who would be better on me than me on the phone, but when they get in front, they just wouldn't have it. They'll either be too silly or almost too nerdy, you know, because like you're talking to a business owner, chances are, I mean, this stereotype, but 40 plus, you know, male or female, and these people got to where they are without messing around. So, you know, you can't, if you lose them in the details, and I feel like a lot of people in the digital marketing space by default, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of my competitors, not all of them, but a lot of the agency heads are developers first, and then they kind of try to run an agency. And I figured that that cripples them, if anything. Because they don't have that, you know what I mean? They're very techie and like they operate within that space. And you and I know that that's the clients rarely relate to that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you're selling to small businesses, like whether it's like a law firm or a dental practice, they don't care. Like they might be curious. Like I worked with a lot of dentists and they'll typically ask a few technical questions just to see like, does this person know what they're talking about? And then it's like, okay, now let's just get me the result, right? Don't care how you get it, stay compliant, all these things. But yeah, like they don't want to go into like the keyword research or this and that and the schema or whatever you want to talk about.
And you could lose them so easily. So, you know, the especially in the early ages, it was a lot more sales than knowledge in digital marketing, because like you could snap your fingers and get run somebody's Google campaign. You know, SEO was just like at that point, at least in Canada, was just starting to roll out, you know, and not a lot of people kind of did it and believed in it. And, you know, and it's still like great techniques, right? We're all over the place. So we mostly sold like paid listings, and, you know, you could lose the person in minute details, but it was like, I remember I had a list, I was taking notes, every single possible question or / rejection. Right. Like, you know, like I'm talking about like, well, if there's only three guys at the top, you know, what makes me show up there? Like, you know, and like, do you have anybody else? Who do you pick? Who do you place above? You know, and you have to explain to them that it's a, you know, you don't pick anybody. It's a bidding strategy. And like, you know, that was essentially the sales, is to communicate to them in the human language that they would understand. Without getting techie of how advertising works, what are the benefits, and make them visualize the return on investment. You know, 10 people click, one person calls or fills out a form, right? So if I get you 30 visits a day, you know, you should have 2-3 leads a day, you know, and we can go from there, right? 2-3 leads a day, you have that for a week, you know, you close, that's roughly how much you make. You make them visualize and go down a path of like, okay, wait a minute. You know, if I do spend a couple of grand a month, I can close X amount of clients and I could make that much money. But, you know, at those early ages, a lot of people are, you know, they had difficulty kind of seeing that process. They believed in the yellow pages.
Right, right. Yeah, which used to work. It was a very traditional way. Like you name your company like 123 Roofing and you show up at the top.
Exactly. flooring that you know, to this day actually exists as a company named that.
Yeah, I always laugh when I see those driving around. It's like, you know, they've been in business for a while with a name like that.
And jokes aside, like we actually use it in our marketing. I have a photo somewhere still on my Facebook timeline where I walked into a client's office in Vaughan, like one of the largest manufacturer foam. They did foam insulation and they had yellow pages holding up their door, like a gorgeous office. Right. There was a wooden door and yellow pages was like stacked like 4 or 5 books holding the door. I remember taking a picture of that. And I, you know, it was like we posted social media, like, you know, digital marketing is the way to go. You know, where's your yellow pages type of thing?
Yeah. Also, yeah. It's so true. Cause it's like, you kind of have to, like, when you have those competing ad dollars, where are you going to put them to get that result at the end of the day? Right. And I think that, like, what you're saying, like, it makes so much sense in terms of, like, you have to find that motivation. How are you going to draw, like, how are you going to connect the dots for the client to put it in the words that they get? Right. And it's like, exactly. sometimes they're fixated on revenue. Maybe it's booked appointments. Maybe it's closed sales. Like, there's all these different things that they may care about. And without actually going through that process, asking those discovery questions, you don't really know, right?
And half the time it's, frankly, like, that we're going sales one-on-one here, but, you know, you sit around the office, and if the guy has, like, you notice, like, that he's into something, and, you know, you could relate, you know where that conversation would lead, right? Mm-hmm. Some people, like, and as you mentioned, discovery questions, they might be very happy and content, but they have negative reviews about them, or they have a competitor that they always see. Mm-hmm. They see their remarketing banners, or, you know, they always Google and see that guy. So it's all about telling them what, I guess, in a way, they want to hear. Because in digital marketing, like, besides us getting them leads, there's so many other things, like reputation management, right? Like, half the time you're appealing to someone's business ego, if I might, right? Like, you want to, somebody has a better website than they do, or they have more reviews. And, like, that's the thing that is their buying point. That's the thing that interests them. And meanwhile, you know, your position's going up, or them getting leads is kind of, like, secondary. So,
yeah, no, I love that. I love putting, like, when you're working with a client, if you can get buy-in against the competitors, now all of a sudden you've formed that bond. You're a team now, right? And it's like, it's you guys against them. And I think that's a really powerful position to get to when it comes to having that lucrative long-term relationship, right? Where it turns into that win-win situation.
But I feel like in the beginning, like, I'm very, I used to listen and read a lot of sales literature. I'm talking about, like, your Dale Carnegie's kind of the world. And to me, it all made sense, you know, and I took notes of it and took note of it. And now, even if I work with my staff, it's silly, but, like, you know, as simple as, like, not sitting opposite of each other. When I speak to somebody that I'm pitching, I don't say, like, your website. I say our site. Mm. You know what I mean? Because we're a team, right? And you never close your arms on your chest. And it's like little things like that, but now they're, like, drilled into my subconsciousness, you know? And I also find that you need to have a personality. Because, like, you can't close everyone. You can't be liked by everyone, you know? But at the same time, that if a particular demographic is drawn to you and you relate to those type of people, right?
Yeah.
Like, whether they're alphas, whether they're the more detail oriented business owners, it's really, like, it's okay not to be able to be liked by everyone, and, you know, not to close everyone. So you just have to pick. And I feel like what differentiates good salespeople from, you know, excellent salespeople is how wide is your gap. You know, how many other people that you usually don't sell to, you can sell to. Mm-hmm. Right? So you can. And whether it's a sex thing, or an ethnic group, or age, or, as I mentioned, like, particular, like, you know, aspects of their character, I think that plays a huge, huge role, you know. And I personally get excited when, you know, somebody who I just, a demographic I don't usually work with, or type of people I usually don't work with, for some reason, we click and they trust me with their business. You know, in my mind, I think that I grow as a salesperson.
Yeah, well, it's really cool too, whenever you bring somebody into, like, maybe they're a customer, client, or maybe it's just a prospect, or somebody you meet at an event or something, and they say that one thing where you're like, I never looked at it in that, like, from that point of view.
Have a light bulb moment.
Yeah, where it's like, I need to start including that into every sales pitch or every prospecting meeting. And yeah, it's interesting. And the cool thing about today is, like, obviously we have all the books and the seminars and all that stuff, but we also have podcasts where it's like somebody can sit down and listen to you, for example, right now, 10 years in. I can't imagine the amount of pain and frustration and headaches that you've had to overcome. And now you can sit down here and, like impart this wisdom of all this, like, hard-earned experience, right? And it's such a great time to be in business. It's like you couple the ease of access to information combined with the ease of access to actually contacting people. And it makes it, like, it only makes sense to get better and better and better at sales, because that's the thing, in my opinion, that differentiates and separates businesses these days, right? There still is obviously the quality of work and all that stuff too, but most people, like, you can have the most amazing quality of work and you're putting out the incredible stuff, but if you can't close those sales, it doesn't matter because nobody's going to see it. Nobody, you're never going to get referrals. You're never going to have a full pipeline.
You know, I also find you touched upon something that, you know, how important sales is. And I feel that in North America, that people factor in the sales is huge. I have friends that work in like big tech, like Amazon and Google, in sales capacities, and they really, you know, have infrastructure where they could succeed. I'm originally of Eastern European background, and I find that like in Russia and Ukraine, for example, the focus is different. They are incredibly smart, have excellent resources. Like, some of the websites you look at that and some of the online services that are produced in those countries are, like, I don't want to say light years, but a couple of years ahead of what we have here in North America. But, you know, it's to sell. Like, and I feel like the role of a salesperson there in those kind of circles is not as important as it is in North America. That typical business guy who shakes hands and has a company credit card, like that stereotype, you know. Is not, I'm watching Mad Men with my wife, forgive me.
Yeah, that's a great show.
Ad agency thing, but, you know, so I feel like that the role of that connector in the relationship person is often downplayed, you know.
Interesting. Yeah. And I think it depends too on the size of the accounts. Like, I think, and I'd love to talk about this, about the size of accounts you go to, but, like, when I started out selling digital marketing, like, I was working with the people with no budget. It's like, there was, like, they were investing like $300 a month and they were feeling that, right? Whereas like, as time goes on, you get bigger accounts and whatnot. And then it comes to, like, I worked with a big software company, for example, and it's like, they, like, whenever we went into the call, they had the expectation that I would fly to see them. And I had to talk them out of that and be like, that's not how I work, right? I had no clue what I was doing at the time. But like, I should have probably got in that plane and went to see them. Yeah. But it's always interesting to see that. And I'd love to hear about kind of how you work and your experience. Like, are you, maybe it's a bit different right now with COVID, but like, are you going to see clients? Are you working mostly remote or maybe even local clients? And like, in terms of the size of it, like, are you, and again, this all ties back to sales, but are you going after like a certain, like, maybe it's like a law firm, for example, I saw that on your website, that has a certain number of employees or a certain number of locations or a certain number of partners, or what does that look like?
Okay, so initially, you're right, you're kind of like desperate and you're going and shooting anybody who's willing to pay you, right? And hopefully, you know, again, I had some family-owned businesses that are really, really wealthy, and you learn, because Google changes. And I think the biggest role is that, like, I've lost a lot of accounts, but because I initially didn't pitch them the right product. You know how, like, people fall off after a couple of years because they have expectations and you don't. So, like, now I wouldn't do certain things because I know that, yeah, they'll get leads now, but in 2 years it'll be difficult to solidify a relationship. So for me now, I'm very picky. I did have a couple of larger companies. I'm not talking about like multinational corporations, but I've done some work for a subsidiary of Two Cows. They're the second largest hosting, right?
And
they have a company called hover.com. Their office is in Toronto. Through a relationship, I was able to do their SEO for 4 or 5 months. I hated the experience. The money was great, but there was like 4 people who I had to pass the game plan through and get their approval. And we wanted to make changes on the website. You know, I proposed them and they're like, well, our graphics person needs to whatever, like our content person needs to approve it, but she's on vacation now and actually she's quitting. So like, it was just out of the 4 or 5 recommendations, we would implement one. They saw the results, but like nobody would sign off on any further initiatives. And they paid me everything they owed me. But literally he like the guy that hired me, he said, we're just not ready to implement this. We have such like issues internally. And I told myself, I'd never do it again. If I cannot reach a decision maker, I don't care how busy you are, right? And there's some decision makers where I talk to, like the marketing team or, you know, the people that are overseeing the digital. But at the end of the day, I want to be able to write an email, pick up the phone. And sometimes, man, there are 5-minute conversations. Like I have a client right now, they're a big, big manufacturer of wood flooring, you know, but my conversations with him are like, you know, is so efficient, right? Mm. Hey, how are you? You know, we did this. I need your yes or no. And it's phenomenal, right? But you're asking me like which clients you go for. I have a rule of thumb now. And I guess, again, I've been doing this over a decade, and you have to get to that point. I understand that, you know, you want to close everybody in the beginning, but I don't work with assholes. And right. As bad as it sounds, like, you have to treat us with respect, be responsive, and treat our team with respect. You know, because like I've had instances where I've worked with, you know, clients and then, you know, and they just have, you know, delusional expectations. They never answer their emails. They never respond to you in time. And then when you, hey, by the way, where is this? Or where is that not done? You know, and if you explain to them that I need cooperation from you, that's fine. You know, but some of them get like to the point, like, I don't know, people are all different, but you want to make sure that there's good groove and positivity and cohesion. And on that note, I was talking to a client of mine over the last 5 years, and he's a good friend of mine at this point. And he runs like a multi-million dollar renovation company. And he told me, I tell my staff, we're not in the business of cabinet making. We're in the business of customer service. And I think you and I would agree that if you have decent knowledge of digital marketing and the will to improve and to get your bases covered, right? To like, if in my world, it's good content, good paid search, good graphics people to do your banners and so on. And you know, backlink strategy. Everybody does it though. Right? I think that's the ability to pick up your phone after 5 o'clock to answer the email, you know, and to be able to be reached and offer that service. And sometimes it's not sometimes, 50% of the time it's, you know, not doing from A to Z, but doing a little bit of extra, you know, and solving people's issues. You know, they look at us as like the end all solution. So whether it's reputation management issues, right? Like an article that's out there, then the address needs corrected, or sometimes as simple as fixing their email. If you could solve their problems digitally, you know, you have them, you're of value, right? They don't really care for reports. I'd love to see how often the clients actually go detailed and how long they spend on the monthly reports, you know, the agencies send them. I'd guarantee you that, you know, 50% don't even open them.
I think the reports, the best serve, like the best use that they serve is when you see them all get opened, you know, you're about to lose a client. There's because it kind of gives you that heads up, like, oh, they're really digging into this after not opening them for the last 9 months.
But again, I have a strategy where like I go sometimes through the middle of the month and look at every single client and just to make sure that I don't want to call it handholding, but and we never used to do this before because what my partner and I were growing the business, there's a lot of accounts. Right now I'm more selective, but I want to make sure that every single client gets some sort of attention. Sometimes it's just a screenshot of positions going up or a new graphical thing that we did on their site or on their social page. But in the back of their mind, I'm working, you know, and I think that, and it's true, we are, you know, I just want to make sure that I communicate that to them.
Yeah. And it's so important too. Like, even if you're crushing it for the client behind the scenes, if you can't communicate and show them that and let that, like, in their mind that they know that, you might as well not be doing anything for them, right? In terms of a long-term lasting client relationship, right? They're going to get to the end of that contract and be like, well, thanks, right? Like, I'm leaving now, right? And sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that sometimes it's communicating to them how incredible of a job you've done. Like, I have a company that does rentals and he's been in business for 2 years. His domain is 3 years or something. At the very, you know what I mean? And he ranks like top two results for his main keyword. And like, they don't realize that like some of the guys we outrank has been spending thousands of dollars for a decade.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm talking about basement renovations for at this point. And like there's agencies, their companies, sorry, their companies, like his competitors, they're just ginormous. Like they own, you know, blocks, like city blocks and buildings, and they have like a 50 people operation. Like I'm talking about full-time staff, and you get to outrank that, and the client doesn't realize what you've done. I think, you know, depending on the client, you need to put that those things in perspective. You know, that like, listen, not only did I rank you number one, like, you know, listen who we outbid. Like, look, you know, how much. It sounds like bragging, but in reality, it's just giving them perspective on the value of your work, right? And highlighting some people take it for granted. Like I have clients who are just getting leads on and on and on, and they think it's normal. And you're like, wait a minute, you know, you have 40 brand new form inquiries plus phone calls every, I'm talking about a dentist right now, you know, every single month. Like this is not how normal people, they're struggling to find new patients. You have them come to your door with like, you know, older information. I'm like, that's, you know, you have to make sure that the client appreciates what you do for them, because as you pointed out, sometimes it's just like, you know, they read the reports at the end of the contract to see, by the way, what have you done for us? You know, they don't really understand the value fully.
Yeah. And I think that that client experience is important too. Like we definitely found that where like sometimes we would just like onboard people and we'd have this rigid process to be like, okay, once a month we'll touch base, we can have our call, we'll send the report, whatever. And then it's like over time we realize, oh, this is actually like just destroying rapport. We have to work with the people like on their terms. We need to proactively engage them. Like it's much more than just that, which is typically thrown around as like standard advice in agency world. It's like productize everything. Don't work with the client, like touch base once a month, send them that report. You can't waste time on it. Like
it's the whole thing relating back to personality. I genuinely speaking, 80% of my clients, I am friends with them. When I say I'm friends with them, I don't take them out to dinners, but like I drink with them at their house. You know, not all of them, but I try to make sure that I work with the people I enjoy. I really, really admire them, because if regardless of the size of the company and their success, in my mind, they are standing out from the 9 to 5, right? Because they took a chance and opened the business and they're struggling, and they all have, like, for me, it's such an educational experience, and it's part of my personal life. Where you said, do you see clients face to face? Before COVID, it kind of crippled me, and I did. I literally have like probably a dozen clients that I would see once a month. I would love it, you know, because, and they would love it because like I'm holding their hand, but it's not very productive. And COVID kind of was a positive experience for us because I realized that I can still keep in touch and update them, but you use digital methods to do that and freed a lot of my time and, you know, made us more and more efficient. My favorite though is the clients that are, you know, not in your local area. You know, everybody loves road trips, at least I do. And if I have an excuse to go to, you know, British Columbia or fly down to Florida or Chicago, you know, do something productive, like have a meeting with a client, feel good about myself and take a vacation at the same time. That's, you know, you said what the goal is, that's ultimately the goal, is to have as many of these, you know, revealing and revelating experiences, you know, like I want to travel using work.
Yeah, I love that. And it, yeah, especially whenever it's like, you know, you're going on a vacation, you know, you're going to chill out, recharge, and then you're also going to like maximize an account or touch base or maybe land a new sale. Like it's something that I've been curious about. I think I'll look into this more in the kind of whenever the new environment emerges and COVID restrictions are turned down a little bit. But that whole idea from a sales perspective of like landing one major prospecting sale in a major city and then just like emailing people and just being like, hey, I'm coming to town. I'd love to meet with you. This is who I am. This is how I can help you. I think that would be so fun. And just like hop on a plane and go.
Now you're talking, you know what I mean? And it's funny enough, but the areas that we market to besides Canada, you know, like I mentioned to you, you know, that I have an employee in British Columbia and I've been to BC a number of times. So we definitely trying to, you know, get more accounts out west, but Florida, you know, like who wants to spend winters in Canada? Like, it, you know, the older you get, the more you realize the benefits of decent weather.
Yeah.
And same thing for me personally, like Texas. I've met a couple of potential clients and other marketing agency reps at conferences before. Man, like I don't have one now, but if I land a client in Texas, like for me, it'd be like, you know, killing two birds with one stone, because it's an area that I want to, you know, explore and go more often to, and you definitely win-win situation. So
yeah, one of my best friends lives in Austin in Texas, and it's so nice to be able to be like, okay, it's January, I'm taking a few weeks, I'm going down there to see him.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Whenever I first made my background's actually in social work. It's my education. That was my career. And then I started learning digital marketing and stuff like that and made the full-time switch years ago now. But whenever I did that, it was winter was coming up. I was like, okay, I got to lower my expenses, all this. So I just moved to Thailand and it was like beautiful, right? Got to escape the Canadian winter that I know you're familiar with and do it. But the interesting thing there is that my first client base actually came from Australia because the time zones lined up, right? So like I'm out there, I'm doing all my prospecting, calling, Zoom calls, the emails, all that stuff. I actually started remote and then I kind of backed into moving back to Canada, getting an office space, working with local people. And it was interesting because I came, like, even if I was working with a home builder or a carpet cleaning company or whatever locally, I still just had the expectation that we would never meet in person until I kind of figured out it's like, oh, a lot of this is just relationships, right? Like you can actually get worse results than they're happy with. And the relationship will give you this massive grace period to fix your issues rather than them just cutting you out the second there's an issue because there's no rapport there.
Exactly.
Now, in terms of you, like, I love your focus on sales. I love how you went into a business and became a partner of it. Like, I think that just speaks to your entrepreneurial drive and your competitiveness. Now, today, where are you putting your time in your business? Like, is it mostly sales, prospecting, building relationships, having those, like, touching base with existing customers to make sure they're happy? Or are you still in the trenches managing projects? Like, what does that look like today?
It's a very interesting question. So I have a friend of mine who's built a successful business, and he tells me that you need a person for each role, and you know they need to know that role from A to Z, and that way you can scale. But then I ask myself, like I'm you know, there's a lot of business people that are just like business scaling, get large. We've had a company that was larger than I am now, together with my partner. The headache, you know, HR, hiring, turnover, you know, I mean, it doesn't happen often, but it did happen, right? And every time, like, it occupies a particular stretch of your time to find and train new individuals. I told myself that now I had an opportunity to, 2 years ago, we split with my partner and I rebranded myself. I told myself that now I'm going to keep it my way. So I have, I call it the exec team of staff. There are four individuals besides me that I work with on a full-time basis. And they are very unique because, and I mean, they all wear many hats. And sometimes it's risky, as you can understand. But on the other end, I almost, I want to grow that kind of rapport and team effort. Like I've never wanted to make it alone and have like a bunch of employees that don't care. So we're all friends. You know, I designate a lot of responsibility and I always make sure that I update all of them at the same time, right? You know, the whole thing, like tell your employees what you need to. I don't have that. You know, I talk to all of them at the same time, always a team. Sometimes even, you know, one of the people is not involved on that area of the business, but I make sure they're on board, you know, so they don't feel left out. And I've structured their pay in such a way where the more the company succeeds, the better it is. Maybe it's cliche, but you know, making it on alone or doing it with people that, you know, I don't want to say we're friends because we're not. I think, you know, you can be friends with a bunch of people because you relate. I think that making money day to day and seeing each other more than your significant other is something, in my opinion, you know, it's like next level of friendship or next level of relationship, because not only do you have a working relationship where you see the good and the bad, right? But you guys make a living, everybody makes a living together. And so with this, with said that, I asked them and I encouraged them and they actually came around and they said that, Shamil, you know, we're taking upon ourselves more for trying to free your time so you can, as you said, go and do sales. And the ultimate goal is, when you say, do I manage projects on my own? I religiously to this day, and I know that in theory I should outsource it and not outsource it, but you know, get somebody else to do it. I make a game plan for every single one of my clients every single month in the beginning of the month. So I sit down, I turn off my phone and my WhatsApp, and I just look at their stats, look at their requests throughout the month, and essentially create a game plan, right? Like, what content are we writing? What making changes we're doing? Mm-hmm. And I feel that, you know, it's a paranoia. I'm afraid that if as soon as I let that go, but you know, that things are gonna go downhill, mm-hmm. right? And generally speaking, keeps me on my tippy toes because I know what's going on, right? So I'm always in tune with the latest updates, position drops, requests from clients, right? Mm-hmm. So I make that executive instruction plan. And don't get me wrong, it's not detailed at all because, you know, the team knows what they're doing. And it's kind of like, you know, Anna, do this. And she knows what I'm talking about. And she doesn't, she'll clarify with me. So mm-hmm. I do that in the beginning of the month for the first week or 10 work days. And then that gets executed throughout the months. And it frees me to do relationships with my existing clients. If, you know, sometimes people have sales or promotions or they want to discuss a new initiative. And at the same time, you know, looking at new accounts and looking at new relationship building, right? Huge thing that is also requiring attention is HR and hiring. I'm of the opinion, and I hear this from my clients and other agency owners, it's pain in the butt, it's a drag. And I look at it really as like routinely working out. You need to have your, you know, your ads, your job postings out there. You need to have the pool of them coming in. You need to, you know, have an hour to look through the resumes, short list of people you want to call, designate that, you know, invite them to interviews, you know, with no expectations, because I feel like, I think you relate, you know, you get 20 people through, you know, through you get 20 resumes, you shortlist five, you're like, okay, this is it. You know, but out of that five, you know, they end up all not being a fit, or sometimes they, you know, they're a fit, but then something's off on them, like it's too far of a drive to the office. They, whatever it is, they just don't work out, and you're all bummed out. You know, I think that this is the way I do it. I look at it as work. I'm like, oh, big deal. Oh yeah, I'm gonna next one, and I continuously do it, and I do it ahead of time. So, you know, we might need somebody in 4 months. Well, guess what? I'm going to slowly start looking through applications now. I feel like that's very important because you don't get blindsided. Sometimes it's like you need a person and you can't find them and you're stressing out over this. And you know, where you continuously have, even if you don't work with them, you identify a good prospect, you build a relationship. Hey, what do you do? You know, I have this experience or that experience. You sometimes, what I do personally, I sometimes go with a project. You know, like, let's say I want to hire like a content manager, you know, I'll give them an assignment and see how they do. And if they do great, I might, you know, start giving them more work. So that one of my, you know, staff members really, really helps me with that, you know, but she interviews people and we interview them together. She organizes it, you know, and, but that's also very, very important.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, if you're not bringing in those quality people, like, you're sunk as a business. Like, that's the lifeblood of your business. If your team isn't rock solid, if your team doesn't truly care about your mission and your vision, it's going to be tough to keep those retainer clients on and attract more new business and continue to get those positive referrals and all that stuff. Now with hiring, so are you exclusively hiring employees, or is it a mix of outsourced work and like freelance, that sort of thing? And
In our world, you understand that it's definitely a mix. You know, it's really funny. I find that the job markets are so different. Like in North America, like the four staff that I have here, that are like full-time every day in, they wear many hats. They're your like turnkey digital marketing consultants. They know certain things a bit more. Like without them, I wouldn't be able to run the company type of thing, right? And to replace one of them is like at least two functions, right? Like, but I also have employees abroad full time, and I find those are a lot more dedicated to perform a particular mission, you know, to perform a particular duty, because the people I have here, they can pick up the phone and talk to clients. They can jump on conference calls, right? So they're, you know, they can address the client's issue, and they're always, you know, upfront. So people see them in emails, people can talk to them on the phone or Zoom. But my employees abroad, they perform a particular function, and they're full time. They only work for me, but I like it that way. I also find that the job market is so much more different because I have trouble hiring in North America, not because of lack of staff, but you and I know that obviously outsourcing has its perks because it's cheaper, but you know, the learning curve, the language barriers, right? Sometimes it's a common sense, not that they don't have it, it's just different. You know, like things, the way things work in Europe, you know, they're not necessarily like, you know, the way things work in you know, Toronto or Florida, you know, and they just, they speak the same language fluently, but certain things they just cannot anticipate, so to speak. But I find that it is easier for me to find staff abroad because I find the pool of candidates who are ready to work for the money that I'm willing to pay is a lot larger, right? Where in Canada specifically, and I mean, again, we have a couple of employees south of the border, but in Canada specifically, I find that there's a lot of this whole, people are less desperate for jobs. You know, like sometimes the situation changes and sometimes they'll be like, oh, it's too long of a drive. Like there's a lot more factors that, that I have to account for, right? Like someone's status changes. Like, let me tell you this, if you find like, I have a designated, you know, employee in Ukraine and she's been with me for 3 years and she's lived in Egypt. She's lived in Morocco. She's back in Ukraine for COVID and she, I think going to Portugal after and, you know, like her life moves on, changes, but you know, we're still working together. Where I've had situations here where, oh, like, you know, me and my wife decided, or I got married, like people prioritize their personal life sometimes a bit more than their career. I find in North America, and I mean, again, right, it all relates to the need for money, for income, but that's just my experience.
Yeah. No, I've very similar experience for sure. It's interesting. I found once I kind of figured out how to hire overseas, that just became more and more and more appealing with that one big deficit of account management.
Of course. Like,
that was super important to have that North American, basically, like Canadian or US, but mostly Canadian. And, but the one cool thing about outsourcing is that like, you can be like, okay, like we're maybe like it's a, I don't know, a custom WordPress plugin or something. You can hire 10 people to create it, or maybe like 10 different projects or something. And then from there, it's like you have a result, like a performance-based interview. You don't even have to talk to them. You can do it through Upwork. You can like just message back and forth. It's like the time that it would take you to sit down, organize the interview, have the interview, screen them, all that stuff. It's just like, let's just see how they do. Like, are they communicating what they're working on, how they are going to solve the problem, all this stuff. And what I found is that was the quickest way to kind of narrow down the short list and be like, okay, these three people are all rock stars in their own way. Who's going to be the best fit to complement the team for whatever function needs filled right now? But I love that, man. It's really interesting that where it sounds like team expansion to improve capacity and then sales and relationship building are kind of your two main focuses as an entrepreneur these days. Is that with that?
Exactly. And I feel that, you know, the priority is on the quality of those clients, but I have one big exception and my staff hated about me. Sometimes you just click with someone. Like they're just cool individuals. And for me, it then becomes not about money. Like, you know, we have a minimum of account that we take upon. And sometimes you meet somebody who's just in a cool industry doing something and they just can't, like, you know, you listen to their story and some of these people are sometimes younger than you are, you know, and you listen to their story and they need help and you're like, hey, man, like, I think it'd be really cool to work together and they can't afford it, you know, at the minimum threshold. And I make exceptions because so for me, that relationship factor always prioritizes, because at the end of the day, I want to be able to pick up the phone, call him, and when I need something, you know, like I'm talking about like whatever he does or she does, you know, whatever, I can call upon that, you know, whether it's a service they do, product they do, and sometimes it's like obviously stuff that I have no knowledge about.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's silly. It's absolutely silly. But like, I had one of my clients who, I have a rental property like 2 hours away from Toronto and I needed the air conditioner installed. Man, I made two phone calls. I literally made 2 phone calls and it was done and I got a discount. Like, you know what I mean? And the guy project managed the whole thing. He literally called me. It's like, it's done.
Yeah. I love that. That makes all the difference for sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome, man. Well, I'm just watching the time. I know you're a busy guy. I don't want to run over our allotted time. So let's wrap up. But this has been super, like, just a great episode. It's really interesting to kind of get inside the head of an entrepreneur who's willing to be so transparent with kind of where they came from and where they're at. I've really enjoyed this. I hope you have too. But before we close out, I got 3 quick fire questions for you. And if any of them don't apply, you can just say pass. Okay. Awesome. So, 1, what is your favorite business or marketing related book?
I would probably recommend some sales literature. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Dale Carnegie. I mean, the book's been written in not our time, but I feel the basic communication and the basic sales techniques, they really, really, you know, apply to this day.
I love that. And do you have any other modern ones, like the Challenger Sale and Spin Selling are probably the 2 most recommended, like real modern ones, as well as like,
how I haven't read those, to be frank with you. I haven't.
Okay. Gotcha.
For my reading, I try to go and you know, read about things that I don't know nothing about. I'm reading a autobiography of a surfer right now in the
city. Oh, interesting.
The Pulitzer winner, like author, and just, you know, that's one of my projects, surfing. So I try to read my literature to expand the horizon, so to speak. So
awesome. I love that. Next question. Are you following or like look up to any CEOs or entrepreneurs right now?
I do so much digital marketing and I've been doing it for such a long time. I find for myself, you know, to come home and in your free time or my education time, to listen to them further. It's not something that I want to do. So what I do instead is I have interest in investing in real estate, right? And I listen to a lot of podcasts. You know, I like my Graham Stevenson, believe it or not. He has a YouTube channel. He's a young real estate investor.
He's out of Mississauga, isn't he? Or Toronto?
No. He's originally from California.
Okay. I'm thinking of somebody else.
Yeah. And believe it or not, I like my Valuetainment.
Okay.
Patrick Bet-David, you know, so these are just 2, you know. Jordan Peterson has some more stuff, but it's not very entrepreneurial. It's more, you know, psychological. And yeah, like I'm kind of always shifting and curious. You know, sometimes I get into my stocks. I'll listen to a couple of stock guys. I try to open the horizons up, you know, and the idea is to stay well-rounded and to kind of, you know, if you listen to too much entrepreneur stuff, I feel like it becomes noise and you don't really, you know, you asked me about a book and recently a client recommended to me and it kind of changed my life, especially considering it's COVID. Miracle Morning.
Oh, I love that book.
It is phenomenal. I started getting up at 6 and reading 30 minutes every day. You know, because of that book. And this is something that I've tried listening to it, reading it is a better option. But I feel like that, you know, was the extra push I needed to kind of change a few things around.
So. Yeah, I love that book. I actually landed, when I was running my agency, I landed my biggest client I ever worked with within like 6 weeks of starting that routine.
Wow.
Yeah, just from that, like checking that, like reading the goals every day and just like having that intention. Like, it's like, this is what I'm after, instead of just like waking up and looking at the calendar and going through the motions. Like, there's so much power in that Miracle Morning setup. It's good.
I have my journal with me, you know what I mean, to this day. I don't use it like the book intends, you know, but I find that writing stuff down, ideas down, it just helps. And I have like a section for goals. So definitely being more structured in that sense, you know.
Yeah. I love that, man. That's cool to hear. And then last question, what's your favorite business podcast, if you listen to podcasts?
You know what, I find, I like, I guess you could consider YouTube, right, to be a podcast. But as far as business specific, I don't really listen to any, frankly speaking. I feel like business... maybe I have some artsy genes. My father's an architect and he always told me that he's in business as well. He told me that I look at the idea and I look at the business and my job is to find a creative solution. You know, and that's the challenge, and that's what excites him. You know, some people are very structured and all about money and growth. For me, it's about lifestyle and being happy with what I do day to day, and that I don't want to change for anyone. You know, and some people are, you know, business and that continuous grind and drive and numbers, numbers. It forces them to be a person that they're, you know, that they're not. And I find that finding that zen between being in business, being successful, growing, learning, improving on the numbers and efficiencies, but at the same time, you know, looking at it as your own adventure. I think that's the part that, you know, they say it's not the result, it's the journey. So for me, like I really get a kick out of that, like the growth. And I try to surround myself. I make a consistent effort to only, and it's not selfish. I don't want to, you know, like a lot of people like, oh, you want to hang out with rich, wealthy individuals. Not at all. It's just, I want to be surrounded by people who enjoy what they do, want to grow, want to make money. And some of them, for them, it's a hobby, right? It's a, sometimes a sport or a passion or a project. For others, it's a business that just makes money and they want to scale it, but whatever it is, you know, that's kind of the area of focus.
I love that, man. That's a great answer. Cool. And then if people want to find you online, we will drop your LinkedIn link in the show notes, and then also your agency URL. That's denovogroup.com. Is that correct? Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for, oh, it looks like you're.
Yep. Thank you, Andrew.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
Pleasure chatting.